Welcome to this week's episode of On Background. I'm Fred Deloria, proud St. Francis Xavier University alum and a conservative deeply inspired by the principles and legacy of one of Canada's most notable prime ministers, Brian Mulroney. This week, we're taking a special look at Mulroney's impact on Canadian politics and his enduring legacy. To do so, I'm bringing in my oldest frenemy from the Liberal Party, fellow St. of X grad, Greg McCachern of Can Strategies, to join me for a chat. Greg and I have a unique history. Our paths first crossed at a Nova Scotia Conservative AGM, where he was the observant eye of the Liberal Party, and then again under reversed roles at a Liberal AGM, where I was sent to spy on his party. Despite our political differences, our shared experiences at St. of X, and our encounters with Brian Mulroney, I hope we have some fun stories to tell here. We've both had the honor of meeting Mulroney, not just as campaigners, but as young Canadians during his tenure as Prime Minister. Greg and I now regularly share the screen on Friday nights on David Cochrane's Power and Politics on CBC as part of the Political Pulse panel alongside our NDP friend Melanie Richet, who we have had on the show before. So today, Greg and I will explore Mulroney's legacy, the policies that shaped our nation, and the personal anecdotes that highlight the character of the man behind the title that I say is one of Canada's greatest prime ministers. So whether you admired him from afar, challenged his policies, or are simply curious about the man who left a significant mark on Canadian politics, I hope you enjoy this episode. So Greg, thanks so much for coming in and having this chat about, this great Canadian legend.
My pleasure. And it's a really interesting person to talk about. Personally, the seeds that were planted, I think, by Brian Mulroney for me in my life, two big areas would be St. of X, as you mentioned, and just politics and watching, his leadership conventions. I think that was the basis of me getting hooked as a political nerd.
That's fascinating, eh? Because you obviously come from the other side, where you're like trying to defeat him and his party, and have done so numerous times, also lost numerous times. But that's an interesting how it got you galvanized and into it.
Absolutely. The first election I worked, dating myself here, good Gen Xer, but it was the election of 1988, which was the free trade election.
Right.
But going back to 1976, I was a wee kid. And, in those days, anyone that was on TV was pretty exotic. You didn't know anyone that was on television. And I remember, not as clear as I remember the 1983 PC Leadership Convention, but I remember our father telling my siblings and I that he had gone to St. of X with this guy pointing at the screen, and we right. didn't believe him because there's no way in those days you would know someone on TV. And my dad got out the yearbooks to prove it. And I think for me, looking at, St. of X, and again, very idealized 1950s style photographs, but, I don't think it's a coincidence that that's the university I ended up attending.
It's funny you say that. I had a very different worldview. First election I really followed was the 88 election. I was 9 years old. And of course, the Prime Minister of Canada went to the university that was down the street from me. That Antigonish was the center of the universe, right? There was nothing outside
of here.
It
still is, Fred.
Right.
Still is.
So to me, it made perfect sense that our sitting Prime Minister was educated at this great institution, which you're currently on the Board of Directors of.
Right? I'm on the Board of Governors of St. of X. I was appointed last June of 23. And I'll a little bit of a sad bit of news to relate was we had our last board meeting just a couple of weeks ago, and we were told that Mr. Mulroney's health had improved and to expect him at the spring convocation in May and at the fall homecoming. And unfortunately, fate dealt him a different hand, but we were really excited to have Mr. Mulroney back on campus. He has a huge legacy, but there's also a physical legacy there with the Mulroney Institute, mm-hmm. with some great new and needed classrooms that were built just a couple of years ago.
One really interesting thing at St. of X is the Brian Mulroney Institute of Government. Is that what it's called?
Governance, I think.
Governance. And they've built this replica PMO or Prime Minister's office, like his actual personal office that you can go into in Anakin-ish at the university, which is, if you go into it, it feels like you're at Langevin Block or whatever. We don't call it that anymore here in Ottawa, right? It's now the Prime Minister's office. You can go into it and it looks and feels just like it was when he was Prime Minister of this country. And I think that's amazing that we have that sort of institution we can go to.
Yeah, they have photos that are lit in a way that you are in the office and it feels like you're looking out on Wellington Street, on the campus of St. Evex. There's also a ton of displays of his time in office with some really cool memorabilia, things around, you know, South Africa, but also there's a Juno Award, I think, that David Foster gave him. There's a lot of really interesting stuff. And again, it replaced classrooms that were in really bad shape. I was there in 2015. I had brought Susan Delacorte in to speak to the poli-sci department, and I couldn't believe, you know, what 40 years of salt water coming off boots had done to a building.
Right.
And I remember meeting Caroline Mulrooney and saying to her, as an art student, we finally have our new facility at St. Evex, and, you know, it's thanks to, your father and your family. And it's a really beautiful building. And I encourage anyone that's in Nova Scotia, you know, if you're there on vacation going through Anakin-ish, it's a beautiful town. But
we don't have these sorts of things, right?
We don't, like in Canada, and we really should. It's a nice repository.
What they've done.
It's really great.
I think that's amazing. And on the Mulrooney legacy and the university there, I want to talk about that later on. But going back to when he was a kid, He was at St. Evex. He was how old? Like he went to he was from Baie-Comeau, went to high school, I believe, in northern New Brunswick, which would have been close to Baie-Comeau, and then went to St. Evex at how, do you recall how old he was?
I believe he was 16.
Amazing.
And in those days, if you were a student that had certain scholastic aptitude and happened to be Catholic and you were on the East Coast of not just Canada, even, you know, the New England states, as we call them, there was a path to St. Evex. For my father was a bit older. My father had first person, I think, in his family to graduate high school and go to university. And he had taken taken a few years off to work. Because when I asked Dad about, you know, did he know Mulrooney well, you know, he said he didn't, because he said, remember, Brian was 16 and in debating club, and I was hanging around with Korean War vets. We were trying to sneak a pint of rum, and I wanted to hear their stories about jumping out of planes.
Right.
But, you know, very, very different time. There's a story, there was a cottage industry in the late 80s, early 90s for books on Mulrooney and his government. And, you know, one of the more famous ones is The Politics of Ambition. John Sawatsky, I believe, is the author. And it talks about him getting off the train and seeing Bob Higgins, who was an upperclassman, and wearing a Harris tweed coat. And Mulrooney was very struck by that. And the next summer, he put away a little bit of money so that when he came back to school in his second year, he also had that Harris tweed coat. Bob Higgins went on to serve in New Brunswick on the bench, but for a period of time was also leader of the New Brunswick Liberal Party. So lots of political connections, from the St. Evex days.
Right. And to that point where he really first got involved in active politics was at St. Evex. I remember the story, and I don't know if this is true. I don't even know where I've heard this. But I'm told there was a club night at St. Evex where you have all the various clubs. Obviously, political parties have clubs, but also activist groups or environmental groups or whatever, or special interest, whatever the interest was, would have club night where you'd sign up and join. And Mulrooney, being ambitious, which he's shown himself to be, was walking down the hall with some friends, and they peeked into what was the Liberal Club, and this is Anakin-ish, which was, you know, the Liberal bastion at a time, poked his head in, and it was packed with university students that were all joining the Liberal Club. And across the hall was the empty PC Club with just a few people in. And here he is, a freshman, and he's like, well, I want to be president. So he took the path to, you know, he went into that room and became a conservative that night.
Yeah, I met Mr. Mulrooney a few times over the years. And in 1999, he told me a version of that story. And in 1999...
Okay. So you've heard this, okay.
Yeah, the class of 59, which my dad was a member of, their 40th reunion. My mother had passed away a few years before. I was then on the board of directors of the Alumni Association, and I told my father, I'm going to be at homecoming. I was, you know, concerned that his health wasn't the best, and I was concerned that he wouldn't want to go, and it's a lot to go when the last time you went to one of these major events, you were with your wife, who has since passed away. So I went with my dad to the class of 59 dinner, and we were seated, and Mulrooney got up to leave the room, and he looked over at my father, and I thought, this is the test. Does my old man really know Mulrooney? How small was St. Evex at the time? And he caught my dad's eye. He came over and he slapped my dad on the back and said, Alan, how are you? They chatted for a little bit. And then he said, Alan, I'm just on my way to the washroom, but I'll come back on, a couple of minutes. And I thought, perfect. That is a great, elegant exit for a politician. We won't see him again.
Right.
And then a few minutes later, there is Mr. Mulrooney. And so my father and I stand up. And I remember being, physically, he is a tall man, mm-hmm. and looking up, and he and my father, caught up a little bit, and my dad introduced me, and using, the full name of when I'm in trouble, Gregory, this is my son, Gregory. I said, Mr. Mulrooney, I Prime Minister, I want to thank you, because when you ran for leader, we didn't believe that Dad knew you. So he got out the St. Evex yearbooks, and I think that's how I ended up going to X. And he said, well, that's wonderful. What is it that you do? And I was very sheepish, because this is 1999, Fred, as you'll recall.
Right.
There was a provincial election in Nova Scotia, and I had worked for the Russell McLean government. We had just lost. And, when governments lose, people run for the exits. And as a result, I got a better job. I was offered director of communications by former Premier McClellan, and we were, I think, down to 12 seats. And so I was kind of sheepish to say 14, this.
You had 14. I know the number.
14, okay. Yeah, you have a better memory than me. I remember, this is a man who won massive majorities. So very sheepishly, I explained the situation, and he just planted his feet. And he stared at me, and there's no one else in the room at that moment. And he told me that how excellent this was going to be for me, what a great career boost this was going to be. And he talked about the opportunity. And the story he used was, he said, when I got off the train in Antigonish, and I believe that'd be like 1955, he said, I looked around, and the Liberals had been in power in Nova Scotia for decades. They'd been in power federally for decades. And they had lots of people lined up. And he said, the Progressive Conservatives didn't. And I got involved with them, and I was allowed to do things because there just weren't people interested.
Right.
And it paid off. And he said, this is going to be very good for you. And I just remember my father's face beaming at this conversation. And I have to say, I'm thinking that 11 years previous, I'm working my first election, 1988, against free trade, the things that we said about Brian Mulrooney.
Right.
And 11 years later, I'm standing there and I just want to melt. The emotions that kind of came over looking at my dad's face as, former Prime Minister Brian Mulrooney is speaking to me this way. And, sadly, my dad lived only a little bit less than a year later. So, okay.
You have that moment. That
I have that moment. And so many people can tell you a story about Brian Mulrooney like that,
right,
where he was just exceptionally kind. And in many, many cases, it was when people were not at their best and probably didn't have a lot of people in their corner. And people talk about getting that call from Brian Mulrooney.
And I've been hearing about that for the last number of weeks. Look, I know all these Liberal cabinet ministers, right now, I believe Melanie Joly came out just a few days ago saying, I would never expect him to be calling all of these people, but he is engaged with everyone.
Absolutely. I worked for Belinda Stronach when she was a Liberal MP. There was, a time where she was very much in the news, and a call came from Mulrooney, and he said, this will be water off a duck's back. And just to know that somebody out there is thinking of you and rooting for you, he's got many, many legacies, but his personal touch, I think, is a really important one.
Well, it's funny. I've often heard how much he worked the phones, constantly on the phone. That was his way of of doing anything. Obviously, in today's world, everyone texts and emails and does videos, but he called people and was super aggressive with it. And it's funny, all the leadership races that I've worked on, and there's been a lot at the federal and provincial leader level. I think it's if you look at it, the candidate who calls the most people always wins. They're that person that builds those connections around the country or province, wherever they're running. And it showed that you know, Mulroney kind of set the standard on that.
Yeah, I talk about the cottage industry of books about him. There's one that Brian Mulroney really, really disliked, and it was the Peter C. Newman one,
right.
The Mulroney tapes, because there were interviews recorded. They were supposed to be for something else. They weren't used for that. I believe that came out, I think, in 2005. And Mulroney famously taped a video for the parliamentary press gallery dinner with language that I will choose not to use. But it was a very, you know, funny moment. But when I read that book, I walked away with the understanding of why his caucus was so loyal to him until the end, because he did those phone calls. You know, an MP would miss an important family event, high school graduation, something like that. Mulroney would call the family, would call the person.
Yeah.
And in 2019, when Justin Trudeau was in the thick of the SNC-Lavalin and Jody Wilson-Raybould, all that, you know, some people around the prime minister reached out and talked about, how bad are we doing? What could we be doing? And I was contacted and I asked about caucus relations, because there was a lot of people that wanted to step in and help, but didn't feel that they weren't given the nod. Everybody, you know, when you concentrate all that power over decades in the prime minister's office, people are scared to make that move.
Right.
And when I asked about it, the response wasn't great. It was, that's not something that Justin Trudeau is, it's not one of his skill sets the way it was for Brian Mulroney. And I said to the person, you want to take a look at this book. You want to take a look at why Brian Mulroney had all this loyalty to the bitter end. And, you know, then those calls started and, you know, they were able to weather that storm through the spring of 2019. But again, that's not something people would not have had to wait under Brian Mulroney for permission to come out and defend him.
Right. Just back to the Peter C. Newman story at the gallery. I thought that was a great video he did. I believe, what year was that? That was... Liberals were still in power, right?
Yeah,
because
I believe Paul Martin was prime minister. So I think in 2005, and if memory serves, maybe spring 2005.
Because it was a big speech about a lot of different things, going over his legacy and whatnot. And then just the closing was so beautiful, where he just references, and Peter C. Newman, go fuck yourself. I thought that was hilarious. How he,
I think it probably took a lot of breath out of that room.
Yeah. So 88's your first real campaign you've worked on. You worked against him. You were driving around. Like, what were you doing?
Francis LeBlanc was the Liberal candidate. Right. And the riding then was Cape Breton Highlands Council. It was Alan J. McCacken's old riding.
So was he running against Lawrence O'Neill?
He was running against Lawrence O'Neill. So Lawrence O'Neill had won in the Mulroney sweep of 84. And it was a hell of a thing for Liberals in Nova Scotia, because Alan J. McCacken had held that riding with one short interruption from the late 50s. He had been Trudeau's deputy prime minister. The joke, there was a comedy theater group that would go around every summer called the Cape Breton Summertime Review, and they're one of their jokes.
Yeah, I've been to that.
You know, like Alan J. McCacken, the J stands for Jesus. There are probably still many community halls throughout. You know, those are ridings, those are counties in Nova Scotia, Antigonish, Inverness, Guysborough, Richmond County. So, you know, very much straddling the Strait of Canso. The riding doesn't exist anymore. And next door.
So you and I both lived in this riding at this point.
In 88.
In 88, you and I lived, because Antigonish and part of Cape Breton you're from was in the same riding then. Now it's going back. It's actually the next election. It will be back.
Yeah, it's starting to switch. And so next door was Central Nova, where Mulroney ran. After he won the leadership, he ran in a by-election. Elmer McKay was the MP. He stepped down. And, you know, there was a certain sense of familiarity for Mulroney, I think, to be back in, you know, an area of Nova Scotia very close to where he had gone to university. And I think he was able to, you know, like there's a I don't enjoy this phrase, the Sanovex Mafia, but I think there were a lot of people around that were, you know, there. And, you know, when you win a leadership and you have to run in your first race, it's really important that you're not going to have to devote a lot of resources to win that. You want a safe seat. You know, Chrétien did the same thing with a seat in New Brunswick a few years later. But for a period of time, Brian Mulroney was a Nova Scotia member of Parliament.
That's right. Yeah, from 83 to 84, well, until the general election, 84, when he swept. And we cleaned up in that area. And that was the most seats ever won was Mulroney in 84, 211 seats, right?
And if I can work in a Sanovex angle yet again, that election was in early September of 1984, and the class of 59 from Sanovex was having their 25th reunion later that month. So Mulroney was there with the RCMP.
Wow.
Guard,
can you imagine?
Can you imagine?
Prime Minister.
Exactly.
Just for a few months and you go
and
to
I,
your...
And I can tell you my mother's birthday is at the end of September. And I believe the dinner was the night of my mother's birthday. And there's a photo somewhere, I wish I could dig it out, of Brian giving my mother a kiss on the cheek and wishing her happy birthday, which we teased my mother about mercilessly for years, especially during the 88 election.
That's funny. It's funny. Sorry, just thinking I've got a year or so, I guess, before I do something really big so I can go to my 25th reunion at Sanovex with some kind of an accomplishment. But I'll get there. I've got a year. I can do
You're
it.
You're doing a podcast with me right there.
That's true. Right. Here we go. Yeah. So it's funny. For me in 88, it was really the first. I was 9 years old. But I was enthralled with it. I followed it like crazy, and it was a fascinating debate. Free trade was a major. It was an election on a single issue. Obviously, it was a big issue, but it was like we don't see that often. And that was kind of what Mulroney did, is he drove these big ideas, and this was the big idea. Because if you look at the 88 election. His majority went down. He still kept it. And conservatives, again, have only won four majorities in the last, like, 60, 70 years. So it's not it's tough for our party to do. But he did it then. But there's so many seats that flipped the other way. Like, safe conservative seats went liberal. Safe liberal seats went conservative. And it was a real funny election. And it was because it was such a single-issue election. But it was one of those issues that really sucked me in. And I was so interested in it. And it's something that I learned from that I still apply today in campaigns and politics, is like, what's in it for the voter? Because I remember my dad's a tribal conservative. He's a loyal conservative party supporter. And we're watching back then we had two channels, so we couldn't help but watch politics and see the news stories. And you'd see the ads, and I'd see John Turner, the Liberal leader, did a great ad on how conservatives were poisoning all the lakes and rivers in Canada somehow. And I was like, oh, that's not good. Maybe I like what the Liberals are doing. And then you'd see the free trade ads come out. And then I remember my dad saying, so you like video games, right? And I was like, yeah. And what do they cost right now? I was like, well, $100 for a video game. And he's like, well, with free trade, it'll go down to 70. Well, from that moment on, I am a conservative. So it was that one little thing like that hit me as a 9-year-old. What do I care about? Where am I putting any of my money into? And what can I get more of? And that's what, in so many ways. And obviously, Mulroney is a big picture leader. But at the same time, it was these little things that galvanized people.
Yeah. And recently, our Friday night boss, David Cochran, did an interview with Brian Mulroney on the passing of Ed Broadbent. And David referenced a front page article from the New York Times from the summer of 1987, the year before that election. The Conservatives were in third place, 23 points.
In 87. Oh, wow.
Broadbent was in first place. And the number one issue in Canada at the time was the environment, especially due to acid rain.
Right.
And the two
Which
big...
was terrifying when I was 8 years old. Oh, it was like... this threat of acid rain.
Did rivers, lakes, streams, yeah. the impact that it had.
So that explains the John Turner ad that I referenced. I didn't
exactly.
even know what that was.
Exactly. Okay. And there was the big pressure on in the United States for our bilateral relations was acid rain and then free trade. And what's interesting is Pierre Trudeau had appointed Alan Gottlieb as our ambassador in Washington, and Mulroney left him there. And probably one of the longer ambassadorial appointments. So he was there for, I think, perhaps 8 years. So he was there under a Liberal prime minister and under a progressive conservative prime minister. But the two big things that got done were the Acid Rain Treaty, which I think George H.W. Bush signed in 91. Do I have that right?
Yes.
And then the Free Trade Agreement. So it was huge. But also, you know, I couldn't help but look at that New York Times article that said the conservatives were in third place with 23 points, and then a year later go on to win a majority election. I mean, perhaps there's some solace for Justin Trudeau in that.
Free trade with who? China? Like, what is he going to do?
Those days are long gone.
That's
the last time I heard that, Stephen Harper was talking about it. So.
Oh, ouch. Ouch. But that was the thing about Mulroney, though, the big ideas. There's NAFTA, there's Acid Rain Treaty, there's apartheid. You know, he was a world leader, something that Canada has rarely had. I know we had Pearson and we had others that really punched above their weight, but Mulroney was that guy that went out and did big things. The GST is a big thing. Like, he was terribly unpopular for it, but he had this view of, it was like, what is good for the country. And to me, over the last few weeks, really seeing that come to fruit, where people are fruition, where people are now, everyone's praising him from all different sides, like the left and the right.
Not all of the big ideas panned out. Meech Lake, Charlottetown Accord,
right?
You know,
but at the same time, those were attempts.
Yep.
But he thought he was trying to fix.
But you know, swung for the fences. You know, and I, the last time you and I were doing our Friday night panel, I pointed out that, you know, it's very telling that the Liberals ran against free trade in '88, didn't change it after they won. And in fact, you know, the government of Justin Trudeau went to Brian Mulroney for help when we had to renegotiate it.
Right.
And the other one was the GST. Sheila Copps very famously had to resign and run again because of how strongly and vehemently she was against the GST. And again, it still exists. So, you know, it's really telling that when your big ideas have landed so strongly that, you know, when your opponents win, they don't change them.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And that's something that he always really championed. In fact, when Aaron O'Toole won the leadership, I was very fortunate to have an hour-long phone call with Brian Mulroney, just him, he and I, one-on-one. The campaign chair for Aaron's campaign was Waleed Solomon, who is a chair of Norton Rose Law Firm, where Mulroney had worked. So they were close friends, so Waleed had arranged this call. And I was a national campaign manager, so it was amazing to hear my childhood hero talking to me for an hour, just he and I. And he talked about this. He talked about how we need a big idea, like a real vision. A lot of people always say, you know, every campaign I worked on, people say you have a vision. To me, that means narrative. But he actually meant vision. And his idea that he was pushing for us to do was open up the North. I don't know how in the 21 election we could have ran on that. It's more of those things, once you win, you can do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very, like, there's just so much opportunity in Northern Canada that we could do it to unlock, particularly, you know, climate change is a real thing. It's unfortunate, but it's a real thing. And there's ways that we can benefit from that as a country in the North. But anyways, he had this vision. He was pushing this. But for me, as that 9-year-old kid on that, basically it felt like I was a 9-year-old kid. It was just a couple of years ago. But he calls me, and just having this one-on-one conversation was amazing to me. And it will always be one of the highlights of my political career, having that.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to that personal touch. That, you know, there's so many stories that have just come out in the last couple of days where people are able to relay them. I do remember one that Don Newman, who hosted, you know, political shows for CBC and would have been hosting them during those conventions that I watched. You know, I remember him telling me that it was not unheard of. In those days, you had a landline. The host would have a landline, no BlackBerries, no iPhones, you know.
Right.
And the phone would ring, the light would go off, and it'd be on commercial, and he'd answer it, and it'd be Mulroney. And Mulroney might want to tell him what he disagreed with that Donna just said. And, you know, you can disagree with the media, and still communicate and work with them. And, you know, I think a lot of the stories around Mulroney is, you know, he's tenacious. He very much was that Irish politician, but also, you know, was very, very classy to a lot of people he didn't necessarily have to be. Susan Delacourt from the Toronto Star, I saw an interview with her recently where she talked about her understanding was on election night in 84. Instead of phoning victorious PC candidates, he was phoning some Liberals that he knew that had lost their seats.
Wow.
And you can...
I've never heard of anyone doing that before.
Right? That's, and you can imagine how quiet their phones were. And his attitude was...
Oh, and when you lose, nobody calls you. When I lost, Elmer McKay is the only one who called me.
Well, he was... He probably, you know, got to see his boss
right,
in action.
Right, right. Maybe he learned from Brian.
And but I thought that was a pretty interesting story. He was going to have lots of time to spend with the victorious PC MPs, you know. But that's also playing the long game. And I think, you know, if you go back and look at the story of how Brian Mulroney became Brian Mulroney, when he ran in 1976, he was not elected. He would, and
right,
the same
he ran
thing,
for leader.
He ran
right?
for leader.
He had no seat.
You know, I think there's an old Ted Kennedy joke about, you know, he would have been a priest, but he wanted to start off as bishop. You know, there is a, you know, when you're want to start at the top
right.
job.
Right. And but that was his ambition.
That's... Yeah. And the thing that worked against him was his success. He had been very successful in business, and he was perceived during that leadership to have spent a lot of money. And, you know, Flora McDonald was running against him, and, you know, very, very small, scrappy campaign. You know, she ran on something like a dollar for Flora or something like this. And she raised, I think, $100,000, which is a lot of money in 1976 that way. So when you look at the other campaigns, his really stood out for that reason, and it backfired on him. And I think there was a compromise candidate with Mr. Clark. And, you know, we all know how, you know, that ends up with the leadership review. And then Mulroney has a second chance in 83 with a very, very different style campaign. But a lot of people would have gone to ground. He had a hard personal time. I think that's, you know, a matter of public record. And, you know, I think Mila, from the accounts that I've read, said, you know, like, you need to figure out, you know, what it is you want to do here. And kind of a straighten up and fly right kind of conversation. And, you know, there's a phrase in U.S. politics about no second acts, I think. In Canadian politics, there are second acts.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's a great example to people that may have struggled or not, you know, landed what they wanted the first time out, and not to give up, and also to have a really hard conversation with yourself. It's a level of self-awareness where you have to, you know, call out all your demons and say, you know, is this helping me or is this not helping me? And so from that point of view, I've always been a bit fascinated with him in the fact that he could have gone back to business and, you know, had those three martini lunches at the expensive hotels in Montreal.
Incredibly successful businessman.
But instead
right?
went like back to public life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Came back 7 years later.
Yeah.
And gave us the legacy he has. And again, going back to what I said earlier, I remember, like, he was, you know, he was deeply unpopular for a while when he left office. Our party went from two majority governments to two seats. I think Kim Campbell was the major fault of that. I think she ran an absolutely, and her team ran a terrible campaign in 93. But our party split into three pieces, the Bloc Québécois and the Reform Party. You know, the Bloc, a lot of it came from those conservatives that were elected under him in 84 and 88. One of them is still an MP. The amount of respect that he is getting from all sides, I think, is just amazing. And I do believe his legacy, it will be that he is one of Canada's greatest builders and greatest prime ministers.
Yeah, absolutely. And you referenced the apartheid one. I mean, people who like to take shots at Brian Mulroney would look at his relationships with people like Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher and say, you know, like, he just seems to be, the term we would use now is fanboying.
He could have been a tag-along, right?
Right.
With those two giants.
And the accounts of him being very direct with Margaret Thatcher and saying, you know, we need to do something about Nelson and Mandela. We need to do, you know, there's a story about how, you know, he's a communist and Mulroney saying something, how do you know this? No one has seen him in decades.
Right.
You know, whose word are you taking on this? And again, I think that is something that as a country, we should always, you know, have a huge amount of pride for our role in that.
Yeah, I think it's, he knew this was coming. I think Maroney knew that the test of time would show his record. And I just wish he got to see it now, like the outpouring of support that he has. And I think it's wonderful what we're seeing. And I'm grateful that his family gets to see this, that he is one of our greatest ever.
Fred, I've asked friends of mine that knew Mr. Mulrooney or their father, you know, may have worked with Mr. Mulrooney, something that has a little bit of context in our current situation. I get asked a lot, you know, on air and, you know, in person, should Justin Trudeau step down? And one of the things that I think about is the 93 election. And I recently asked a friend of mine whose father was very close, worked with Mulrooney, and said, you know, like just from that point of view in 1993, if Brian Mulrooney had ran, you would have probably, the party would have lost. But would you have been down to two seats?
Right.
And it really stops people. And that is something that, you know, I think about is in terms of, you know, what would have happened. His challenge is not one that Justin Trudeau currently has. Thank goodness, I'm sure he's thinking of this. But a wing of his party, you know, separated. And in real time, he was looking at
two wings, right? Reform and Bloc.
But people like Deborah Gray get elected, you know, in Alberta. And it starts. There's a lot of anti-Quebec sentiment, you know, and you know, there was a something that could have gone to Manitoba, went to Quebec. All these, you know, these divisional plays start. And you know, as bad as the polling is for Justin Trudeau right now and jokes about the Liberal NDP coalition aside, Justin Trudeau isn't facing that. And that is something, you know, Mulrooney had to face. He had to face, you know, Bouchard, one of his closest friends, you know, walk out of the party. You know, there's a story and it could be legend, but after he resigned, Bouchard supposedly waited in front of Centre Bloc for his car and driver. And it never showed up.
Wow.
He had no idea. People ensured very immediately that he felt the effects.
Wow.
But it was interesting to see recently that Bouchard has been interviewed and said that they were able to, you know, make some reparations in their relationship. And that's good.
Yeah, I saw that. They made up in a sense, despite, you know, basically, they are at war for the country, right? These guys and the betrayal of Bouchard to do what he did to try to destroy so much of what Maroney built, for them to be able to make up shows the man that Maroney was as well. If anyone goes back and listens to one of the first episodes we did on Background with Carl Blanger from the NDP, we talked about Trudeau leaving, and that was my argument, was that if Trudeau leaves, we don't know what's going to replace him. I don't see a lot of contenders there that could really, you know, they're so inexperienced. And Poilievre is a political machine who has been training for this for decades. His team is not new. They're not inexperienced. They've run and won national campaigns before. So if Trudeau does step out and goes for that, I guess, walk in the sand as we're getting into, as the climate changes, I don't see anyone in the Liberal machinery able to do keep this together at all. So I've said that for a long time, that I think Trudeau is the only shot they have. But at the same time, he's got to start showing something. He needs that big idea. Maybe that's what he needs. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe they need to look at what Maroney tried to do and so many different times and accomplished at different times and come up with a really big idea that is that one ballot question. Because if it's scattered the way it is now, then they're doomed.
Yeah, I think the context is important in the fact that we've had a couple of minority governments. And, you know, in 2019, the Liberals should have easily sailed to a majority reelection. And because of, you know, the things I was talking about earlier about, you know, that the scandals at the time, you know, there was a lot of reasons they were reduced to a minority. And had they had a majority, you might have seen, hopefully not to the level it got with Martin and Chrétien, but you might have seen some people who were able to do some, think about long-term planning and whether or not I want to be ready the next time. Because for many years, Justin Trudeau was the was the best thing, the best brand. He was the brand. And a lot of people owed their seats to Justin Trudeau, owed their success. Mulroney could say the same thing about 88. Mm-hmm. So I think the challenge for the Liberals is there's not really been the opportunity to start to do some leadership preparation without looking like you were pushing the boss out the door. And Liberals are very allergic to that because of what happened, you know, the results of the Chrétien Martin, you know, escapade is that, you know, Paul Martin only got to serve as prime minister for 2 years. So right. I think people are really cagey about that. And you're right. It may hurt the party. But I don't think there was anybody comfortable, even around the Liberal AGM that was, biennial that was in Ottawa last May. There were, you know, some ministers that had hospitality suites, and all of a sudden there was a lot of talk about whether or not it was, you know, appropriate or not.
I was at that convention doing media. I was invited on as a conservative observer. And that was a lot of the chat, was all the different Liberal cabinet ministers that were putting out feelers. But they all seemed like duds to me. I don't know if any of them could actually...
Well, if I was to respond, I would have to acknowledge that they were actually looking for leadership. And then right. I'm not going to do that. Right. But, you know, I think, you know, long term, there are some people there that have... the same flair for oratory that Brian Mulroney had. And when I was watching his speeches recently, you know, there are certain politicians in Canadian history without notes who can just fire up a room or an outdoor event. And so I look to people like, you know, Sean Fraser. I look to people like Mark Miller, who can answer a question without having to read it. I mean, there are some things that people could look at Mulroney the politician and learn from.
Well, I guess with, you know, the one thing Sean Fraser has in common with Brian Mulroney is they both represent Central Nova. So there's something there.
And just as a quick thought, Fred, I am aware that Brian Mulroney and Sean Fraser had a pretty good relationship, and they used to speak on the phone.
I'm sure they did. Lot. Of course, Mulroney called him.
Yeah, I ran into Sean following the event here after the Queen passed, the event in Ottawa where Mulroney spoke. And, you know, they were chatting on the phone in front of me. Mulroney had to go back to Montreal, and so he wasn't going to see Sean or something that day. So I think, I share that because I think it shows that...
A man who loves his country, right? Doesn't care the
exactly.
political stripe. He was a partisan conservative.
Still was keeping an eye on the place he used to
represent.
I think
that's amazing.
In 1983. Yeah. I thought that was great.
Yeah, and... to his legacy, again, I've said this numerous times, but like he was so unpopular when he left office, and to now to be looked at as one of the greatest prime ministers really shows what he did when he was in office. And I think that's amazing and something that, you know, all prime ministers should aspire to be. It's not about doing the popular thing. And I'm at fault of this myself. I'm a campaign manager. I'm all about what's the poll saying? How do we win the next election? You've heard me say this a million times, like how we go on the narrative, what's the message? How are we winning this? But what Mulroney did was about what was right for the country. And his legacy has panned out. We live in Brian Mulroney's country in so many ways and what he built. So I think that's a great way to end this. So awesome chatting with you, Greg. This was a lot of fun. Obviously you and I have known each other for decades, from opposite sides of the aisle. But it's always great to chat with you.
Appreciate the opportunity. And I just add, my sympathies to, Mila Mulroney, his family and his many, many friends.
Agreed, Greg. My wife actually works for Caroline Mulroney on the Ministry of Francophone Affairs in Ontario, and our deepest sympathies to that family. An amazing legacy that Mulroney left, and of course his most important legacy is his family. So our obviously condolences to them. This was another episode of On Background, where we went into a bit of a different topic today, talking about the legacy of what I again think is one of the greatest prime ministers of our history. Tune in next week for another episode of On Background.